Before I get started, I just want to sincerely thank everyone who's brought us food. If you don't know, I've had a third child. People have been bringing us gifts, and it's just such an outpouring love. It's really helped. It just means the world to us. I know everyone's kind of been wondering how we've been doing, and I just want to tell you, it's been super easy, really. It's almost like we've got no kids at all, like no big deal. It's been like we're just having great moments, you know, plenty of sleep. as we continue to talk about being a radiant church, I was kind of tasked with this particular section entitled Love Your Family. And I was obviously chosen because my family's perfect, and it's really been me who's orchestrated that. Daisy's not had much to do with it. And people ask me, they say, how do you do it? And I say, I don't even know. It just happens. Honestly, I've been home a lot more recently. And I've kind of been, Daisy had a C-section, so she can't really deal with some of the other kids and pick them up. So I've kind of been a stay-at-home dad for a little bit. And sometimes I'm like sitting there doing something. I'm just like, how does Daisy do that? How does she do this all day, every day? And she's just like, and I have dinner ready when you get home. So I have to tell you a quick story of how awesome I've been doing. The other day I was, the kids, Aurora's at that age now where they can kind of play pretend, and or Flynn just tells her what to do and she does it. And they're on the bed kind of pretending that it was a ship and they're on some adventure. And I'm just like in the kitchen, like mindlessly doing dishes or something. If you've, you know, recently had a baby, you know, you're just like, kind of like, tired. And kind of off in this world doing the dishes. And I hear Flynn out, you know, at the corner of my mind, being like, Aurora, come back here. You're too close to the dangerous one. You're too close to the angry one. You're in danger. You're too close to the angry one. Come back. You're too close to the angry one. And it kind of snaps me out of it, and I'm like, it's like, Flint, she's standing next to me. And he's like, I know. And I was like, is this in your game or is this in real life? And he's like, in real life. And I was like, why are you calling me the angry one? And he's like, I don't know, because you're angry all the time. And I was like, well, I'm angry because you're always disobeying me. Get in your room. it did make me check. Like, now I'm like, when I'm starting to get mad, I'm like, all right. I don't want to be known as the angry one. I'm obviously. As we talk about loving your family, there's only one real perspective I have, or I really thought there's only one perspective I have, and that's as a father. But I also kind of have a perspective as a youth leader and getting to know kids in the community and kind of what happens in their families. And I just want to warn you guys, married couples, especially ladies, it'd be best if you keep from giving any side eye during this sermon. And if you don't know what side eye is, I have an example. This is royal side eye. did anyone watch the royal wedding? Because Daisy was super into it, so we had to watch it. We watched like all of them. We watched like some leading up to them. So we're out there and we're watching the royal wedding, and like Flynn and Aurora are just sitting there watching it. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, I can't believe they're just sitting here watching this. It's so dull. And like, I'm just laying there. And I happen to catch Flynn's eye, and he like looks over and he goes, like, I don't know. I'm just doing it, you know? And Daisy kept trying to make it interesting for them and being like, that's a prince. Flynn, that's a prince, a real prince getting married. And he's like, the guy dressed like a policeman? And we're like, yeah, that's the guy. And you may wonder if that has anything to do with what I'm preaching about, and it doesn't at all. But you may be asking yourself too, if like family, like Jesus talks about love, and yes, that should just leak into our families, but does he actually say anything? Does it say anything in the Bible about family, about how our families are supposed to be? Does it say anything specific about our home? I mean, it actually does, and you don't have to turn there, but in 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 5, it says this. Here's a trustworthy saying. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. Now the overseer, this is like a church leader, is to be above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, me, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money, He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him, and he must do so in a manner worthy of full respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? I know it talks in the Bible about, if you're not faithful in the small task, how can I entrust you with the big task? So it makes sense, like if we can't manage our own families, the people we know the best and the people we love the most, how can we do a bigger family of people that we don't love as much and we don't know as well, right? So it makes sense. And I think it's a pretty big deal to God because he says it, the type of home that we have. Today, I want to look at a father in the New Testament and see an interaction that he has with Jesus. And I think in this interaction, we can see what God wants of us. So if you will, we're going to turn to Mark 5, 6, 7, and 8. Just kidding. It's 5:21. And I'm going to do something pretty miraculous today. You'll see it in a second. So in Mark 5, 21, it says this. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him, and a large crowd followed and pressed around him. Now we're going to skip to 35. You're welcome. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha koum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. So this man, Jairus, is the leader at a synagogue. Okay, scholars believe he wasn't like a pastor or anything. He was more of like an administrator. But at this time, just to give you a little context, Jesus' relationship with the synagogue right now is less than favorable. Okay, they've already kicked him out. He's not teaching out of the synagogue at all. He's doing so by the lake, out on mountaintops. And so the synagogue, and this man possibly could have been one of Jesus' staunchest detractors prior to this moment. And even if he wasn't personally, he at the very least knew that Jesus was not someone with whom he should be seeking help, right? This day, I'm sure he got word from Jerusalem, from the temple itself, there's this guy Jesus going around, have nothing to do with him. Don't let him come in the synagogue. He's gotten word. He knows who he is. He knows he's supposed to stay away from him, and yet he comes to him. In the end, he comes to him. And I think that we find throughout stories in the Bible and even in our own lives, we fight him till we need him, till we're desperate, till we're desperate. And then we come. In the end, we come. We're willing to try anything. And Jairus was willing to try anything. So this man, this leader at the synagogue, he's a highly respected individual. He would have been much like a mayor today. So he breaks through the crowd, it says, falls at Jesus' feet and pleads with him. Let's be clear about what this might cost him. Once word gets back to the temple, to the leaders, that one of their own, a synagogue leader, was seen breaking through a crowd, falling at the feet of Jesus, and pleading with him to heal his daughter in front of the whole town. In front of the whole town, he's going to lose his job, at the very least. His very respectable job. He's not only fraternizing with the enemy, he is begging the enemy. He's begging him. And what's he begging him to do? Heal his daughter. He is practically verifying to the entire town that he believes that Jesus can heal. He's verifying it. Everything the temple's been trying to do, anything the synagogue's been trying to do, he just reversed it by being the most respected man in town, falling at his feet and begging him to come heal his daughter, he is going to be in so much trouble. He is going to be in trouble. And not only that, not only is it going to cost this man his job and the respect that comes with the position, but it's also going to cost him general respect. The type of respect we want from those around us. The type of respect that women want from other women. The type of respect that men want from other men. Or men want from people. Like, I know as a man, I don't really want to be seen crying or falling at someone's feet or begging them. Right? Right? No one wants to be in that position, groveling, appearing to be less than someone else. And especially in this time, right? This is shameful. This is shameful. This is embarrassing for the whole family. It's like, get up off the ground. You look ridiculous. You look ridiculous. I mean, it would be ridiculous today, but in this time, man, this man has damaged his reputation. And then after this shameful display, Jesus disrespects him again. He stops along the way. What I skipped was there's this lady, this old lady who's had this bleeding disease, and she touches Jesus, if you remember the story, and he says, "Who touched me? I felt power go out." And he stops and talks to her, and she's just this like lady in rags, and Jesus stops. Now, as this guy, you'd be like, man, do you know who I am? You dealt with her before you dealt with me. Do you know who I am? Do you know what I just did? Do you know what it just cost me? I came. I need you to hurry. I need you to come. This is important. And you stopped to do something else for someone else who's less important than me. And you did it in front of everyone. You're tending to this dirty woman before me? Are you serious? Are you serious right now? And this pause that Jesus takes to heal this woman costs something. Because by the time he's done, his friends come and say, "Don't bother the teacher anymore. She's dead." It's too late. It's too late. Jesus had taken too long. He hadn't come quickly enough. Right? And we can kind of tell in his friends' reaction that they didn't want him to do this. Right? Maybe even his own family, everyone he knew, tried to talk him out of doing this, tried to persuade him not to do this, not to put his reputation at stake, to go throw himself at the feet of this man and plead. It seems like they tried to talk him out of it. They were so quick to say, "Don't bother him anymore. Don't bother him anymore. Come on. Come on. Let's go." It's almost like when you're talking to a child, like, you know, we'll have people come to the door on like official business or something. They're like, "Oh, I'm here to, you know, fix something," or "I'm here to get you to sign up for something." And Flynn will just start talking about it. Like, "Hey, do you know who Luke Skywalker is? I was being Luke Skywalker and I was fighting." And you're just like, "Come on, don't bother him anymore. Don't bother him anymore." Right? You're almost like a little embarrassed. Like, "Hey," it's not important. Right? And that's how his friends are talking to him. They're trying to save face. They're trying to save face for him. They're like, "Come on, don't bother him anymore. Come with us. Don't do anything more foolish than you've already done. Trust us. You'll thank us in the end. Come on. Come on." But Jesus overhears them and says, "Don't be afraid. Just believe. Don't be afraid. Just believe. One more opportunity to look foolish in front of everyone. One more opportunity." And not only that, but Jesus has asked him to trust him over his friends. These friends just came from the house. They know the family. They're obviously close enough to be there in such a difficult time. They've been there. They come and say, "These are the facts." And this man who just got off a boat, who he doesn't know at all, has says, "Don't listen to them. Listen to me." Not only might he look dumb, not only has he probably lost his job, his respect, but now he might lose his friends because he believes Jesus over them. Imagine how mad you'd be as a friend. Be like, oh yeah, okay, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I didn't see what I just saw. Maybe I'm an idiot, right? I mean, that's disrespecting them in some ways, right? Maybe at this point, you know, they're like, "You know what? Go ahead. You want to drag your name down? You do it. But don't drag us down with you. You want to look foolish? Do it. fine, but not me. Don't drag us down with you. I'm not going down with you. This guy's stock is sinking so fast, and it's not even over yet. It's not even over. Because they arrive at his house, and there's this commotion. They come upon a horrifying scene. Everyone is weeping and wailing loudly. It's called a commotion in the Bible. And Jesus says, why all this commotion and wailing? The child's not dead, but asleep. It's kind of funny, like, how would you be in the home with all that going on? And these people at the home, they're family members. It's his family. It's his closest friends. And Jesus once more says this thing that just comes off as stupid. It says in the Bible, they laughed at him. And in some versions, they say they laughed him to scorn. And don't just think that they laughed Jesus to scorn, that the scorn just fell on his shoulders. It was like, this is who you went and got? You gave up your last minutes with your daughter? You went to get help? You don't get a doctor? You don't get a wise man? You got this guy? This idiot, look how dirty he is. And he just walks up and he says she's just asleep and he hasn't even been here. This is who you got? You're a fool. But there's a wise saying. Who's the bigger fool, the fool or the fool who follows him? And it came from a great book. Actually, it's a movie. And it's one of the greatest minds of our time. His name is Obi-Wan Kenobi. If you remember. I had to do it. Star Wars, every time. That's what we're trying to do. So this man, though, this man went from being the most respected man in the town to being a laughingstock in an afternoon. In an afternoon. And it saved his child's life. It saved his child's life. He didn't care what anyone thought of him. This was too important. It was too important. This is too important. But I think we care too much about what people think. Maybe first century Christians, their issue was physical persecution, was being killed. And maybe we're like, I'm thankful that didn't happen. Or maybe if the line was so clear, if it was black and white and not gray, we could deal with that physical persecution. But today, the things we deal with is, can we handle being called foolish? Can we handle people seeing us as idiots for believing what we believe? Seeing us as bigots for believing what we believe? Like, seriously, this is what it is. You don't want people to know you're a Christian because you're like, you believe that? You believe God created the world? You believe that he loves you? You believe that you talk to him and he listens to you? Like, it is foolish. It is foolish. And honestly, it's too much. It's too much for many. It's enough to make us change what we believe, to adapt what we believe, to stop believing, to stop telling people we believe it, because it's just too much to be considered foolish, to lose that respect. We want people to look up to us. Can we handle being called an idiot? That's all it is. Can we handle it? Or will it cow us? And honestly, I think it has. I think it has. Because everyone wants to be well thought of in the community. We want to maintain our influence. We want to be respected. We want to be highly regarded. We care too much what people think. We care too much. And I think this is especially true of men. It's especially true of men. When there's something I can't do, and I need to call someone to fix it, I need to admit I can't do it, oh, I hate that. I hate that. When we were young, my parents divorced and we lived far away. So whenever we moved, it would like my mom and four girls and me. And so all these guys from the community would come help and I would be out there doing more than any of them, lifting more than I possibly could because I hated it. I hated it. Like when I was old enough to get my own car, I got a truck so that I wouldn't need to ask someone else for a truck to move stuff. That I could do it by myself. It's something that's ingrained in us. When I go out to eat, I think men can, you know, when the kids are like, you know, and women seem to be like, that's what it's like. You know, and they'll even like with other women being like, oh yeah, I know, my day was like that yesterday. You know, and guys are like, that's it, we're done, we'll take it to go. This is embarrassing. This is embarrassing, I can't believe that you know what I mean? Like, come on, and everyone's laughing because they know You know, they're just like, this is because it makes me look like I don't know what I'm doing at home. Makes me look like I'm not managing my family well. Right? It's embarrassing. We want to be thought. We want to be well thought of. We want to be seen as manly. We want to be respected. We don't need help. We don't need any help. We don't want to admit that we can't do something. And it's pride. It's pride. And it's the same pride that makes it difficult to surrender to Jesus. Difficult to proclaim him. Difficult to follow him. And it's an epidemic. If you don't believe this, look at the disparity in numbers for men's conferences and women's conferences. Hillsong, the biggest church in the world, has a women's conference in several locations and fills arenas, and they have no men's conference. Not one. Do you think they would if they could? Do you think there's no interest? Do you think you can't get enough men to go and be sold out for God? Let's be real. You see a woman in church being like, and you're just like, oh man. She's just going through it. You see a man like this, you're like, what's wrong with that guy? I'm serious. We're like, you know, guys, you got to have like a manly, if you raise your hand, you got to be a manly way, you know, like. Or just like quick, like giving it to you, props. I'm serious. Like we're like embarrassed. We want to be seen as manly. That's why I don't care what people think. And I just go like this. And Daisy's like, you stop doing that. You do it like I do it. I'm just kidding. But listen, like women have become the spiritual leaders, man. Women are bringing their families to church. Women are becoming the spiritual leaders in the home. They are. And the guys are like the one like, we're still praying for him. I'm still working on my dad. We've given it up. We've given it up. Women, good for you. Men, that's shameful. We've given up our task that God's given us to bring our families to church. Like we're the ones that mom is fighting most of the time. And it's not everybody, but it happens all the time. I've heard so many testimonies from our teenagers. Many of these kids have come to church on their own. Some against their family's wishes. Some of them have brought their families to church. And they give their testimonies, and they often talk about whether they don't have a father who's present, because it's not just a church thing. They don't have a father who's present, or they have a father who's present but isn't interested in them, or they have a father who's just not a good spiritual father. And they talk about how they have found surrogate spiritual fathers at youth. And they say people like Joe Croswell, people like Bill Scannell. They say people like Craig Carson. And I don't know about you, but if Craig Carson is your surrogate, your child's surrogate spiritual father, shame on you. How embarrassing for you. Yeah, Karen said we got stuck with him. We didn't even choose it. But honestly, I always rip Craig, but that's a testament to who Craig's become. Yeah. That Craig is a surrogate spiritual father for other people's kids. And I can't get him to stop. I'm like, hey, listen, welcome to youth. If you're going to pick a surrogate spiritual father, don't do Craig. Just going to warn you, he walks that line between spirituality and worldliness. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. Wow, I'm doing a lot more about you with you here. You should come to 11:15. We better. But seriously, but listening to these kids talk about how their fathers have failed as spiritual leaders and how they found ones here at the church, like that just, I just like, man, I know that I want there to be other adults in Flynn's life who have helped guide him into being a man of God. There needs, like Corky says, every time we have a child dedication or child baptism, he says, this is a village. This is all of us. We all have to do it. And it is so true. And there are going to be adults in this room who affect your child's life for the good. But if someone has taken over my main job, shame on me. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. Who? When I was disciplining Flynn the other day, one of many, many times, because we're just like going at it, you know. I didn't punch him. It was just like a Just an example. I do joke in front of people because like spankings are so like, you know, I'll be like, Flynn, if you're really bad, I'm going to give you a face spanking. Just to be funny. And people are like, what is that? And I'm like, well, that's why I hit him in the face with a spank. But I don't do that. It's just a joke. I like saying things like that. The people are like, is he serious? And I'm like, you don't know, do you? But I told him, I was sitting with him. I was like, listen, bud, I don't like punishing you. I was like, but God gave you to me and he gave me one job, and that's to return you to him, to raise you up that you know him, that you live with him forever. My job is to return you to him. And he told me I have to do this. I have to punish you. There has to be consequences, right? I have to break your Batman video game in front of your face so that you know I'm serious. And also because that game's super annoying and it's kind of self-serving for me to break it. I didn't actually do that. I just, in my mind, I'm just like, oh yeah. But listen, I feel like I'm like losing my mind right now. Are you guys like really worried for me? You're like, that first thing was kind of funny. And now I'm like, let's pray for Flynn. Actually, he's so cute. The other night after he was praying, he's like, can I add something? And we were like, yeah. And he goes, Lord, help me to be obedient because I just can't. And I was like, you will. No. I was like, I love that that's his heart. I love that he does want to be. Listen, what it comes down to is if we're going to be a radiant church, we have to be radiant within our own homes. Because what is in our home leaks out. Just as what we put in comes out, it leaks out. What is in our homes leaks out. If we're to be radiant, we've got to be radiant within our own homes. It starts there. That's where it all starts. That's where your kids decide if this is for real or if it's all a facade. If your kids decide if we care too much what people think or we're the real deal. It's all there. That's where it's determined. That's where it's decided. Do you love your family enough to be considered a fool to everyone else? Like Mark just looked like when he hit that cymbal. Rebecca! Man. No, but hey, look at that. Look at that. His daughter's playing in the worship band with him. How awesome is that? That's radiant. That's radiant. Do you love your family enough to be considered a fool outside your home? Do you? Because their lives are at stake. They are. Their lives are at stake. They're deciding right now whether this is real or if this is a facade. Are they worth losing respect over? Are they worth losing friends over? Because Jairus decided they were worth it. He decided they were worth it. And it saved his daughter's life. It looked like he was losing everything, but he gained everything. He gained it all. The thing he asked for, he got. Because he trusted. And he was willing to follow Jesus when it didn't make sense. He was willing to follow him when he looked stupid. He was willing to follow him when his friends said not to. He still did it. And he saved his daughter's life. As a church, what are we going to do?